You're listening to World Oil's Deep Dive, where you'll get to know the authors of technical articles in World Oil magazine and learn more about their company's technology and how it's shaping our industry. Now, here's your host, Jim Watkins.
We're here today with Rob Shoup, the Operations and Technical Support Manager for GyroData, and Chris Earl, who's the Wireline Logging Production Line Manager at GyroData. And we're here with them to talk about an article that they co-authored in the March 2020 issue of World Oil Magazine. And for those of you at home, you can follow along on page 23. The name of the article is "Digital Technology Provides High-Density Tortuosity Logging to Address Drilling and Production Challenges." All right. This is an exciting article, guys. I mean, there are three case studies in here. It's really in-depth. But before we get started, Rob, why don't you tell us a little bit about your educational background, how you came to be at GyroData?
So I attended the Institute of Electronic Science at Texas A&M University and hadn't graduated, been out of that environment, the university environment, for very long when I came to work at GyroData. It was in the early days when they were redesigning electronics for the gyro itself. That was purchased from a third party whose biggest client was the United States government selling these gyros for missile guidance technology. So I started in January of 83 initially. So I've been at GyroData for basically my whole adult lifehood, and it's really been a wonderful experience. Seen quite a bit and have really enjoyed it.
All right. That's excellent. That's excellent. That's unusual, huh, to spend your whole career in this business at one company so far. So that's a great thing. All right, Chris. How about yourself? Tell us a little bit about your background, how you came to be here.
Well, whenever I got out of school, I went to work for a logging company, Schlumberger, and learned how to do cased hole and open hole logs and kicked around a few different companies in the interim and wound up at GyroData about 15 years ago, learning how to run gyros.
Wow. So both of you guys have been around for quite some time then at the company, yeah?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. Well, let's jump into the article once again for everybody. That's March 2020 issue, page 23. And it starts off, and I know I've seen this before on other case studies and things, but you start talking about how the tortuosity logs really help for placement of artificial lift technology. And then you go on to talk about patented new high-density wellbore logging technology. Now, is that the technology from, what were you talking about? It was 2014, 15, or is there an update to that?
No. So what I was describing, or we were kind of talking offline there a little bit, Jim, was about the fact that we came out with a service that we call MicroGuide, which is an analysis utilizing high data density from the log we collect in the wellbore. So historically, everybody's taken information that's collected while drilling from a measurement while drilling or MWD instrument at average stand lengths of about 92 feet. And that's all the information they have to look at. And so there's a lot that goes on inside a wellbore from each one of those individual points to the next point that you can't see. In this service that we provide, it actually gives you the ability to look at all the information in between point A and point B, if you will, and to look at it in three dimensions and do an analysis on it that was not possible before. That's what it's about.
And so how is that? Explain to me, because I'm really a layman. I'm a marketing guy. So the tool just allows you to take continuous measurements as you're running down hole instead of every length. How far apart are the measurements?
So we're collecting data points every 21.7 seconds. And
holy smokes. Okay.
And from that, we're building a file that has all this information. So when we're done logging a well, we might have hundreds of thousands of lines of information, which is actually too much to analyze in itself. So that data is processed, and then we look at the wellbore in intervals of 1 foot. So now, instead of having intervals over 92 feet, or what they refer to as a stand, which is typically three joints of approximately 30-foot drill pipe, we can look at that wellbore every foot and analyze what's happening in between all those spots that were missed before.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. So the MicroGuide system sits kind of behind the drilling section, is that right?
No, MicroGuide is actually a service that is run after the fact.
Ah, okay, okay. But the tool itself is taking all the measurements that's on the bottom hole assembly down there?
No, it's run typically on wireline, on slickline. We've been looking at the possibility of actually doing a drop where we're collecting that information while we're dropping through drill pipe,
okay.
Which there's some challenges with because the fact typically inside a drill pipe, you have drill pipe connections where the internal diameter decreases. So every time it goes through that connection every 30 feet, we see a little bit of movement, which can hinder the actual measurements that we're making.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so all of the logs right now are run after the well's drilled, but we are looking at an application where we could actually be inside the BHA and do real-time torch velocity calculations or real-time microguide where you could project, you know, you take the data that you've had for the last 100 foot, you analyze it, and you look at a trend analysis, and then you can project how to reduce torch velocity in the drilling that you're doing ahead of you.
Right. Because that's a whole different level of thing, right? Because then you're really being able to help out the drilling crew and hopefully, you know, get the well a lot straighter. Whereas primarily what we're talking about here is an analysis of the well bore that has been drilled compared to the old system of doing it, I guess you'd say. In figure one, I think you guys all have the article in front of you, right?
Yes.
In figure one, is that what we're looking at? Regular one and then an updated version of the log, or what are the two side-by-side charts we're looking at there?
So figure one is actually a log that we pulled, and this is a well that we did over in the Middle East where the client had placed his ESP into an area that was highly tortuous, and the ESP failed a couple times. They were getting a lot of water cut in the well bore. And so we went out and ran the log, and this. So what this log is depicting is the maximum internal diameter that's usable, and then also what the actual ID is of the pipe, and then you can see a little color chart on the right hand side that shows good and bad, blue being good, red being bad, of places where you can put this ESP to maximize its production.
Oh wow, that's even something I can understand, a non-technical guy, the red bad, blue good. That's quite interesting because it becomes really obvious. But I'm jumping ahead of myself a little bit, because that is your first case study, right? Was this operator in the Middle East? Can you guys always ask this question, but feel free to say no, you can't. But who was that? Who was the operator? Do you guys know?
It was actually Saudi Aramco.
Oh, okay. Okay. Excellent. So yeah, into that first one, you go down and you start talking about the problems. So who was directly involved in that case, in that Saudi Aramco job? Were either of you guys in there?
So, as far as doing the job in Saudi?
Yeah. Or doing the analysis, you know, once everything came back, I guess, really.
Yeah. Rob does all of our microguide analysis at this point.
Oh, excellent. Okay, Rob.
Yeah. So
you say... You said in the article that the initial production was around 390 barrels per day for several days, and then it dropped to zero after that. And that's when they picked up the phone and called you, or what? How does that work?
Well, they were looking at it, and historically, something that we're trying to do with what we refer to as microguide is get away from the fact that historically everybody's looked at dogleg as an indication of tortuosity or how crooked is the actual well path. But the dogleg historically has only been doglegs over every 10 meters or 90 feet, 92 feet. So like I was explaining before, you miss a lot that's happening in between those two points. So actually what happened in this well was they saw that they had a high dogleg, and the pump manufacturer said, well, you can't push our pump through that high a dogleg, even if you've got someplace on the other side to put it, because the fact it'll damage the pump. And that was strictly based on the dog leg. So once we ran the microguide log, we were actually able to analyze it and tell them, well, how many degrees of bend are they going to see when they push the pump through there? And at that point, they decided, well, even though the dog leg's extremely high, the bend on the pump inserting it is not going to damage it. So they decided that they could push the pump, set it deeper, so that the pump would run continuously without drawing down the fluid level, losing its prime, going dry. Then it would have to shut off, and it would have to wait a period of time for the fluid level to rise back up inside the wellbore before they could run the pump again. By placing the pump deeper, they could run it continuously and not pull the fluid down to the point where the intake went dry and they had to cycle it on and off. So that...
Yeah, and that made all the difference, right?
That made all the difference. They were actually able to continuously produce that well, as opposed to shutting it down and then having to let the formation recharge, push the fluid up the wellbore so they could turn it back on.
Yeah, and not only does it help with increasing the production, but it also helps decrease the wear and tear on the pump, having to start and stop. I mean, starting and stopping these ESP pumps has historically been the number one killer of these things. It shortens the lifespan dramatically, having to cycle on and off. So if they can leave these things running pretty much all the time, then they get a lot better longevity out of the pump.
Yeah, so that's a win-win because you have the increase in production, right? Because in the article you're talking about, it went from 390 barrels per day to 600 barrels per day. No more stopping after a certain amount of time. So 54% production increase, but also, you know, you have better lifetime on the ESP, so you don't have to go in and replace it, right?
Correct.
That's a good one. And that, so that was the first one. That was the first case study in this article. And on page 25 now, we're looking at the second one. It was a Latin American operator who had ESP failures. And so they were having a lot of downtime and things, and you helped them out on that one.
Correct. So that actually coincides with the graph on page 24 in the lower right. And in that particular case, the operator had set the pump at 3,050 meters. And it was a rather large pump because of the fact that this was a really big well. And you can see that the black line is the azimuth from the MWD, or measurement well drilling tool. And it showed a nice steady curve as they were coming up to catch their final azimuth of about 51.5 degrees. But in reality, what happened, they went out and they pulled this pump twice. It was a subsea completion, so they had to get a semi-sub over to actually...
Expensive.
Very expensive. And it failed twice before they actually called us. We went out and we ran a microguide log for them. And that you can see is the actual azimuth in red. So you can see where it was swinging back and forth. And this was actually drilled by a rotary steerable tool that's most supposed to drill a smooth hole. In this particular case, it held its angle or inclination fairly well, but it was swinging back and forth with its direction. And that was putting a bend on the pump and causing issues.
Yeah, this is a perfect case study to identify that you can't use dog leg to set these pumps because, like Rob said, this was drilled with a rotary steerable tool, and they did a very good job on holding the inclination through the curve section, the build. The inclination was pretty much spot on to the survey and the log that we went out and ran afterward. But they had these wide azimuthal swings that the tools just weren't picking up, and that they weren't seeing whenever they were stopping and taking their survey stations. So they tried to set this pump the first two times it failed based solely on dog legs, and they put it in a low dog leg area. And we confirmed that, yeah, as far as dog leg is concerned with inclination, the pumps that failed were in a low dog leg area, but they didn't take the azimuthal swings into play, which really adds a lot to the tortuosity.
Yeah, you can see that in red line with the swings. I mean, that's pretty incredible, right? So, but this is an interesting thing to me. So why is this, if you're going to use your tool and you're going to do this analysis, why doesn't everybody do that? Because like you said, this log, right, from MWD looks clean, but they wasted a lot of money trying to get a pump down there before they decided, hey, wait a second, we better do something. We better find out really what's going on down there. Why don't people just do that from the get-go?
Well, it's a good question. And obviously, we tell everybody that, you know, it's relatively inexpensive insurance. We have several clients that run them on every well they drill. And they know that it's not every well needs it, but a lot of wells do, and it pays off in the long run. Something else that's interesting that's come out of this is that a lot of the wells that were drilled and are drilled, the drilling people don't really take into account what's going to happen on the production side. And I learned a lot, Chris and I have, over the last few years from production engineers with things in regards to tortuosity. And like they say, if you put a little bit of a nudge in a well high up in it because you're drifting off of vertical and you make a correction, you can really hurt the guys down the road, because when a well pulls down and you can't run an ESP on it anymore or gas lift and you go to a beam pump, or rods where you pump the rods up and down, that one little kink at surface creates a really big side load that just kills their production. They have to work those rigs over quite a bit. So there's been cases where we've gone in, worked with the production guys who have in turn worked with the drilling guys, and they've changed their procedures in the way that they're drilling these wells, and they've mitigated this to a certain degree, which is a huge savings.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah. Yeah, that is a huge savings, but it's always been a weird thing to me, because if I'm an operator and I'm paying a drilling contractor to drill my wells, you think part of the incentive would be to make sure that you know, that the well is as straight as possible and that you'd want the measurements like you guys can give them to ensure that there's not going to be any problems. But it doesn't seem like the case because it's the operator who gets stuck with the production end of it later on, right? I mean, that engineer is out there and he's like, you know, wait a second, you know, my rod's breaking all the time. What is the deal? And then they got to come back out and run it. So if I was an operator, I think I'd want this done on all my wells as well, just so that I have that information when I'm planning, you know, the artificial lift phase of the whole thing.
Correct.
Yep. And that last, you were talking about the rod guide placement, and that's that the third case study in that article, right? So somebody out in the Anadarko Basin, they had a rod pump failure, right? Because of the rod breaking or what?
That's correct. And so in this particular case, and we've seen this actually quite a bit, where in the past they've been relying on dog leg and taking the surveys every stand and in some cases every 200 feet. Like in Texas, the Railroad Commission will allow you to submit a survey every 200 feet. So now you're going from a 92-foot interval or 100 foot to 200 feet, and you're really missing a lot of what's happening in between. So historically, there's a couple of different software packages that will show you side loading, but we actually have our own now that takes into account all the information that we look at every foot, as opposed to 15 or maybe 25 foot that you can put into these other software packages because they can't handle the amount of data that we can produce. But it just shows that, and in this one example, Jim, where it shows there is a dog leg, but it's only a little over a degree that it shows at about 4,400 feet in that area. And typically, you know, a 1.3 degree dog leg is nothing in the drilling world. But after we ran our microguide log, you can see where there's actually a few anomalies that are happening at those depths. So the information they had wasn't necessarily incorrect. It just didn't have enough information there to expose in reality what's happening. And so we see this quite a bit where you can run an analysis based on the information that the production people have that's readily available because it's there when they drilled the well, or it was surveyed at some point in the past on a legacy well, and compared to our data every foot, and it's kind of hard to see, but in the side force graph there on page 25, lower right, the black line is the MWD, and you can see that the one spot, the side loading comes up to about 100 pounds. They mimic each other really well, but then you've got these two other peaks that jump up there that the MWD only shows it's about 40 pounds of side load. So it's things like that where it can really open the eyes of a production engineer and he can go, well, you know, no wonder I've got these issues. And
right, exactly. Yeah. No, that's amazing. I mean, those two graphs on page 25 at the bottom, right, with figure three and figure four, but that figure four with those two extra spikes after the initial one where they're mirrored, that's impressive. That's got to be like a terrifying thing for anybody to see who's a production engineer who's been working downhole and thinking like, oh, yeah, I understand what's going on down there. And you show them something like this, they're like, what? That's not what I had in mind at all, right?
No, that's exactly right.
But at least they do get an idea of what's really going on. So now they can make decisions based off of the true tortuosity and the true picture of the wellbore rather than just, you know, trial and error until they find something that works.
Yeah, and that trial and error can get like crazy expensive. I mean, we didn't mention it, but in that Latin America one, I mean, that was $7 million of lost time and damaged equipment that the company was monkeying around trying to get the ESP placed. And on this one, I think there's a number in here, right? Each failure was averaging $5,000 to repair and causing up to 2 weeks of downtime. That's a lot. I mean, how often do guys, I mean, you must see this a lot, right? Because when you get called out on something, it's like, we can't figure it out. Can you guys help us? That type of thing. But is it typical? Well, how many times did somebody try it and not get the results they want before they're like, wait a second, let's just back up and do something different?
Oh, it happens all the time. We've got a couple of examples where operators have been working over wells every 3 or 4 months for years before they call us out, you know, and we come out and we do our analysis, we run the package and help them out where to place either their rod guides or their pump or whatever. And, you know, they wouldn't have to go back on that well for a year or 18 months after that. So we have a handful of those. I mean, Rob's probably dealt with, you know, 50 of those examples over the years.
Wow. That is crazy because in this example, the one we're just talking about here in Texas, you know, it says that the operator saved more than $50,000 and 70 days of workover lost production time just by running your tool, doing the analysis, and getting things placed properly. So for me, especially in this environment, right? I mean, it's been this way for a while, but now especially if you're producing, you don't want $50,000 expense to go back in there. You don't want that, right? I mean, you're going to try to avoid that at all costs. But if they had your data, it wouldn't be an issue to begin with.
Well, it certainly gives them a lot more information to base their facts on, if you will. Just for the people listening, Jim and I were kind of discussing some things offline when we first started this. And I remember we didn't actually have our analysis finished at the time to show SideForce. But by utilizing even higher density data, an engineer said, he goes, you know, some of the wells that we have beam pumps on at the price of oil, and this was nowhere near where it is today, just over $20. But a lot of these we've been working over so frequently that they're just all going to be shut in. They're not economical to run anymore. And for a small operator that's got all his wells are on beam pump, this could be the difference between being able to make some money or not making anything off a well.
Wow. And so tell me, I mean, obviously it's different for every job and whatnot, but you were talking about it being like a low cost insurance to make sure that you have an accurate picture of your wellbore. Give me a rough idea of percent of overall cost it would cost for you guys to do this for somebody, the cost of a well. What, 5%, 10%? How much?
The cost of the well versus the cost of the microguide?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, it would be portion of 1%. That's a very small overall cost if you're looking at the cost versus the cost of the well, or even the cost to pump the well for a year. We're very, very small percentages in that.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. I would think that anybody who's listening to this would be like, yeah, we need to do this all the time. Because for that smaller percent, I mean, you got to be thinking that anytime you're losing $50,000 and, you know, 70 days of production time or $7 million, you know, I mean, that's a lot of money. And that small investment up front really help mitigate a lot of that, you know, or at least give you a better shot at not having issues, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, that's impressive. So what else are you guys working on? I mean, you guys have some interesting technology. I mean, is there anything we should be looking forward to coming down the pipe? So now you got the analysis, you got the SideForce analysis. We talked a little bit about maybe having something down in the bottom hole assembly. Is that the next step?
I think that's the next step for microguide, is to do some type of a microguide real-time analysis for that. But something that we have been just recently put out maybe a year ago, is the ability to run these tools, these microguide tools, in combination with other cased hole logs. So you can, adds a lot of value to the client with only having to go the wellbore one time and get a multiple different logs run at the same time.
Yeah. No, that would be really interesting to have that, for sure. And well, I'll tell you what, thank you guys so much for being on today. I don't know if you guys personally subscribe to this podcast, but I'm going to tell everybody who's listening a little trick. This is something that somebody showed me. I couldn't believe it when I saw that it worked. If you have an iPhone, all you got to do is activate Siri, however you activate Siri, and say, subscribe me to the World Oil Deep Dive podcast. And it'll pull it up and subscribe you to it right away. So if you want to hear your beautiful voices on the podcast, you can do that immediately afterward. And for everybody else who's listening, definitely subscribe. It helps out, helps the numbers grow. And yeah, thanks again for being here, guys. And a special thanks to Stephen Forrester for organizing all this. I mean, he's done a great job for you guys, and I got to give him a little shout out too.
Absolutely. He does a great job. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right, guys. Yep. Take care. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Take a look at today's show notes for links we mentioned in the podcast. We enjoy your feedback, so if you have any questions or comments, email them to deepdive@worldoil.com. Check out worldoil.com for the best oil and gas industry technical articles and news. And join us next time for another Deep Dive with World Oil.